like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. Whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Grey Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Welcome to Witch Police Radio. One of my favorite things about doing the show over the number of years I've been doing it is that I kind of have the opportunity to meet people that I may not have necessarily encountered sort of in my everyday life. And there's a lot of artists, you know, wide range of genres that I've had on the show that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have encountered if I hadn't been doing the podcast. And I think that the guest on this episode is one of them. I mean, this is your third appearance on the podcast over the years, and you're always doing something very interesting. So I'm glad that I got to meet you through this show and that we've, you know, been able to talk about all these various things you've been doing. So I think the best way to start this off is if you want to introduce yourself, give a bit of background about what you do, and we can take it from there.
Certainly. Thank you, Sam. My name is Adele M. Wilding. I am a professional jazz singer, composer, and educator. I'm based on Treaty One territory. And as Sam has mentioned, this is my third podcast with Witch Police Radio. I've previously been interviewed about courses that I've offered through the Manitoba Conservatory of Music and Arts. And today I will be promoting my new show that's being presented in celebration of Black History Month 2026.
Awesome. And yeah, I think that that's the interesting thing about having you on too, is that you're always doing something that's very different in terms of, you know, whether it's something educational or in this case, like this performance you're doing. So yes. I guess with this one, I mean, you know, Black History Month is in full swing at this point. We're in the middle of February when we're recording this. And obviously there's a ton of events going on around the city, which is always great to see. What can you tell me about the background of this event that you're putting on?
Well, actually, Sam, last summer, I had this idea to present a concert during Black History Month. And the genesis of that idea came from jazz vespers that I have performed in at the Crescent Arts Center.
Yeah.
About two or three seasons ago, they had a jazz vespers series. And as part of that series, I was invited to perform in February 2023 and to perform pieces in honor of Black History Month. Now that series has since ended, and I felt like I wanted to contribute both professionally and personally to Black History Month, given my own cultural background, which
for
is
sure
part British, part West Indian. And I really wanted to honor the West Indian side of my heritage. So I set about to create this concert back in September, booked the venue as far back as then, and then I gradually started adding the musicians that I wanted to have perform on this show.
And so this is now, is finally happening. You have a date, you have a venue, you have everything going on.
Yes.
What kind of content is happening here? Because I think that the interesting thing about you and your sort of past experiences on the show, if people have heard those, is that, you know, you've had sort of strong focuses in all of those educational side of things in terms of historical Black forms of music. I mean, you've done a lot of work as far as spirituals, focusing on the different forms of Caribbean music as well. And I mean, obviously you're a jazz artist. These are all, you know, types of music that have their origin in Black culture and Black communities. And obviously this is all relevant for the month that we're talking about here. But what kind of content can people expect at this show?
So this show will feature predominantly African-American spirituals to help tell the journey of the African-American experience dating back to the transatlantic slave trade and the music that came out or evolved out of that experience of oppression and discrimination and hardship. And I named the concert Songs of Hope and Resilience because each of these songs carries those meanings and those conditions, those human conditions that people experience when they're going through something that is counter empathetic, if there's such a term, to the human condition.
For sure. Yeah.
So we will be performing predominantly African-American spirituals. They're spirituals that are in my repertoire. I have performed them, for instance, at the Black History Month Jazz Vespers that I mentioned earlier. And I've also performed one or two of them as part of my jazz sets. The workshops that I've created for the Manitoba Conservatory of Music and Arts has featured these spirituals as well. Not all of them, just a few of them, because my content for them has to be very specific.
Sure.
So I'm drawing on a whole range of spirituals. And the beauty of it is that I will be taking most of my musical influences, jazz, soul, bossa nova, and blues, and we will be using those influences to deliver the arrangements that people are going to hear on February 21st.
Okay.
And in addition to those spirituals, we will be featuring a few covers as well, too, that fit the theme. And we're really delighted to be able to present this music to the local community. And I'm very excited about the performers who will help me present that music on February 21st.
And, you know, the first time you were on this show, you were doing the workshop about spirituals. You were very involved in this same material, a lot of the same material that you're presenting at this show. And I talked to you before you did that, you offered that those courses. So what was the experience like sort of afterwards for you after presenting this music to people who maybe some of your students weren't super familiar with it or the background or the power of some of these songs? Like, did you have, what kind of response did you get, I guess, from the people who participated in that workshop?
I had an overwhelmingly positive response. It was almost exhilarating. And I have been in a situation totally irrelevant to the Manitoba Conservatory workshops where the response was mixed. But okay. I'm very happy to say that the people for whom I've done the workshops within that particular setting were very receptive, very responsive. And I'm very thrilled that in the 21st century that we can continue to tell the story of the transatlantic slave trade and the whole African-American experience, starting with slavery and then the great migration into the northern states, civil rights movement, and of course the Jim Crow laws of segregation that underpin that experience for these people. So I'm very happy that people have taken to this, and I do have students who ask me, they actually request to learn spirituals and some of the Caribbean folk songs in my various teaching settings.
Oh, cool.
So okay. It's all very rewarding and exhilarating for me as an educator.
What does it feel like for you as an artist, you know, when you're interpreting these songs and you're presenting them? Because, I mean, like you said, this is all very deeply embedded in American history, but obviously there's parallels in a lot of countries, including Canada, including in Europe. I mean, this is, you know, you can be singing about the United States and what people there went through, but there's connections sort of all over the world to some of these, you know, traumatic issues that people have gone through in human history.
Absolutely. Well, I think each of us as artists are unique. And so many of us come from different cultural backgrounds. And the onus is on us artists who come from communities that are considered to be marginalized, or communities where there has been a history of oppression.
Yeah.
The onus is on us to try and convey that to our audiences through our music. So me identifying as an Anglo-West Indian artist, I want to be able to share that mixture of my culture. I've spent many, many years performing European music, European classical music, European art songs, the Canadiana songs that have come out of Canada, some of the great rock and pop artists who've contributed to the Canadian musical landscape. I perform a lot of their repertoire, and it is only in my later years that I realize I haven't done enough to promote the West Indian side of my repertoire.
Okay.
So to answer your question, I'm very happy and very proud to be able to present the music, not just from the African-American experience, the African-American folk tradition, but also the West Indian folk tradition.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that in Canada, too, I mean, a lot of people, there are a lot of people of West Indian background here in this country. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
And from so many different countries in that region. I mean, you know, yes. It's a huge part of our culture is having people from all of those countries who have come here, or their parents or their grandparents have come here and added to the overall Canadian culture, too. So it's cool to see that kind of stuff getting highlighted, because I think that a lot of people do look back to that culture and represent it, but it's only within recent history. And I think that what you're doing is going back many, many generations before.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to point out, too, that in one of my prior podcasts with you, we were talking about the West Indian impact on British music post-World War II. And we talked about your dad's background as well, and being British, like my father, and just ruminating about the many influences that West Indian music had on UK society, particularly the youth.
For sure.
That had just come out of this, you know, really intense period of war, and seeing parts of their country desecrated as a result of that war, and then discovering this beat and this music that was so unique and so different to their ears. And of course, we're referring to reggae and the earlier forms like ska and dancehall, Jamaican dance, all of course, calypso music.
For sure. And that was super interesting, that part, because I mean, as someone who, you know, I know we've talked about this at length before, but yeah, as someone who grew up listening to that music as a white Canadian, it's always very cool to hear other people's interpretations, especially people who are sort of from the culture of origin that brought it to the UK and then spread it sort of worldwide beyond that.
Absolutely. And of course, the impact it had on some of our more contemporary groups like the Police and UB40, groups of that nature, and hearing that reggae sound. And hearing the Police use it the way they did, the way they had woven it into their own music, I found fascinating, being a child of the 70s and the early 80s.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to do it, because they didn't play it straight up as reggae. They had obvious influences from it, and then it sort of melded and mixed with what they were, the other influences they had, which I think is what is the best thing to happen to music over generations, that you hear little slivers of it that find their way into other forms of music. And I was actually going to ask you about that, because I mean, you know, talking about the Caribbean stuff, about reggae, about ska, about calypso, dancehall, all these genres, there are obvious parallels to where they've sort of slid into contemporary pop music and here in North America, in England and elsewhere. But do you feel like there's the same, I'm sure there is, the same lineage with these spirituals that has sort of, there are earlier genres of music, like, I mean, soul music, for example, is very heavily influenced by that, blues, gospel, all of these things. But clearly, right? But do you hear the sort of trajectory of spirituals in today's music? Like, is there as much of a through line that you notice as there is with reggae, as there is with ska, with some of those genres?
Well, to be honest with you, Sam, I don't listen to a lot of contemporary pop music anymore, because it just doesn't speak to me. And that's me speaking very genuinely.
I agree
and
with you as well. Yeah, for sure.
But one thing I have noticed, a few years ago, I started listening to country music, because when I'm doing a summer road trip, if I'm going on a road trip somewhere, I want music that isn't going to be too relaxing.
Sure.
I love classical, but I can't listen to it on a road
trip. You don't fall asleep while driving.
That would be disastrous. If I start listening to jazz, that will distract me too, because I'll start tapping my feet and maybe doing a little bit of scatting. Can't have that as well. So I started listening to country. And I really started to listen to it because I can hear the influences of work songs country songs.
Yes.
And it reminds me of that In Excess song that came out, where there was hand clapping, there was a guitar riff, and then they had all the voices in unison.
Okay.
And I can't even remember the name of the song. But that was also influenced by the work songs. And if you listen to We Will Rock You.
Oh, for sure. The clapping and stomping.
Absolutely. That goes back a longer way. But the influence is there. And I'm hearing it in contemporary country. Whether it's conscious or subconscious, I hear it. And I can't remember the name of the artist, because I listen to a lot of songs when I'm road tripping, obviously.
Sure.
But I did hear that influence in there. And I thought, yeah, they're bringing it back.
Yeah.
And I love blues country too. There's still a lot of country artists who are fusing blues.
Yes.
With the fundamental elements of country. And I'm thinking, yes, we have to keep doing this. We have to keep remembering the roots of popular music.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting that you describe it like that too, because I mean, I think that maybe some of these country artists you're listening to, they very likely don't even know where that comes from. They've heard it, you know, interpreted into folk music, and then they've interpreted it into something else and something else. And by the time it gets to, you know, a 25-year-old country singer, maybe it's so far removed from the original source, but it's still the feel of it is still sort of it's undeniable, right? Nothing. Absolutely. Time has not stopped it.
No, absolutely. And I think if you listen to, there are songs in the country genre that are written on the minor pentatonic too. So this is going way back. This is spirituals. This is blues music. So, and as you say, a lot of these artists may not know that they're actually doing this. They may not be conscious of the fact that they are taking all of this early music, all this influential African folk music, and fusing it into their own form of country.
Yeah.
But it's good to hear it.
It is cool, yeah, for sure. Well, so do you, I mean, obviously the importance of these songs is in the cultural history and in terms of, you know, maintaining sort of access to that history and people's own versions of what happened that have been passed down through song and oral traditions and things like that. But in terms of actually the sound, I mean, taking the importance of the subject matter and that sort of decades and generations of history aside, like the actual sound of this music, I mean, where do you think that this fits in 2026? I mean, you're playing a lot of these songs that have such deep, deep roots and, you know, if you're playing them relatively traditionally, it's a sound that maybe hasn't been heard other than, like we've described, sort of seeping into other styles of music over the years, right? So I don't know, I'm not sure what the question is, but like, how important do you think it is, I guess, to preserve the sound as well as the message?
I think it's very important to preserve the sound of this music, as well as the sounds of any early music that have evolved into the music that we're listening to today. I think it's very useful as well that we do have months that honor the contributions, be it artistic, scientific, social, such as Black History Month. And I love how it has taken off here on Treaty One territory. And as you were mentioning at the beginning of this podcast, there's so many activities going on in February with regards to Black History Month, just in our city alone. And it is very important because this is how people are discovering sounds. And you're conveying history through song. Once in a while, I'll encounter somebody who's a little bit uncomfortable with singing songs as they were written. For instance, singing the lyrics as they were originally written, because of course the English that was spoken by the enslaved was merely the mimicking of the English that the slave owners and the plantation owners were speaking. So there are people that are uncomfortable with that. And fair enough, if they're really that uncomfortable, I will arrange a song in a way that is comforting, but I like to be able to draw a line with that as well.
Yeah.
Because it's very important that we acknowledge things as they actually occurred and developed.
If you're talking about something so historically important too, right? You can't alter it because you can't learn from it if you're changing some of the key aspects. Yeah.
That's right. And this is important aspect as well too for contemporary acquisition of music history, because you can't change history.
Yeah.
These songs present themselves as they present themselves. And we have to try and get past this culture of being hypersensitive to things that make us uncomfortable. There are aspects about this history that make me uncomfortable.
I'm sure, I have no doubt,
You know, but I have to get over it because my job as an educator is to tell the truth and to tell history as it really happened.
Yeah.
This sort of sugarcoating it, for lack of a better expression, I don't agree with it because there are certain aspects of history that have happened to other groups of people that we have to learn as they're presented.
Yeah.
In schools, they don't always present history the way it actually happened. And I'm not being disrespectful to schools here.
Well, it's selective. It's selective. You know, they have a certain amount of time and curriculum they have to decide. It sucks to say it like this, but what's important, right? Which is going to be the most impactful, and that's going to just naturally omit a lot of things that happened that are still very valuable to study and to learn about.
Absolutely, and I feel that my job as an artist and a member of the culture that's being presented in the music, it's my job to just say no, it's okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with you singing those songs the way they were written. There's nothing wrong with you singing about the enslaved because they're facts. This is how it all happened.
Yeah.
And I know there was one instance, without mentioning names, I was having a meeting with one of the musicians that's involved in the concert. And I'm very excited to have all these musicians on board. And one of the things I like about them is they've all in some way been touched by the African /Canadian cultures.
Okay.
So if one of them is uncomfortable, for instance, like this particular musician about singing a particular song that arose out of the transatlantic slave trade, I will say, it's okay. I'm here. You can do it.
Yeah.
Because there are certain songs that were actually presented in a more entertaining way, like Harry Belafonte. He would sing a plantation song or a song that nowadays people would feel uncomfortable listening to. But it's history. And I say to people, and I know I'm using the word history a lot. I'm aware that I'm using it a lot. But I'm using it a lot in this discussion because I want to emphasize the root of this.
Yeah.
Where we're coming from. And yes, plantation songs are a part of the history. So we're going to sing it. If Harry Belafonte can sing a plantation song, Lead Belly was singing plantation songs.
Yes, definitely.
Right, we're going way back.
Yeah.
Then we can do it in 2026.
For sure. And so something interesting you said a few minutes ago about, you know, all of the focus on this cultural music and art and society and everything else in Black History Month. How do you sort of, what needs to be done to maintain interest in this beyond February? Because February, people are hyper-focused on this. They're seeing it on the news. They're seeing it, you know, they're seeing posters. They're seeing shows. They know people who are putting on events. But, you know, once that's done, obviously, all of this content is still extremely important. It's still important for people to hear these songs and to know the history. I don't know if this is an answerable question, but how do you sort of maintain that once sort of the highlight of Black History Month is over?
I maintain it primarily through my educational activities. And if I may interject here, I do have workshops that I will be conducting the afternoon of February 21st. They take place at the Manitoba Conservatory of Music and Arts. And one of those workshops, for instance, is blues singing for adults.
Cool.
And that runs from 2 to 3 o'clock. And then from 3 to 4 o'clock, I'm running a workshop called Introduction to Gospel Singing for Adults. And this is, apart from being a plug for those workshops, it's also how I maintain sharing my culture and my history with the masses, so to speak, with the mainstream. Population.
For sure.
So I think it's important to do this throughout the year. And I do offer these same courses in the fall as well, just to, you know, just remind people this is something that is really useful to learn.
It's not only in February. So if people are hearing this for the first time, and maybe they're hearing it after the show's already happened. I mean, hopefully they're hearing it beforehand and they can get out to the show, and we'll plug the show in a second. But if they're hearing this, you know, maybe a year from now, and they're curious about some of these courses you're offering, is there sort of a place they can go online to find you and find out what you're up to and find out if there's any other programs you're putting on?
Absolutely. If you want to learn more about me as an artist, my website is adellemwilding.bandzoogle.com.
Okay. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes too.
Thank you kindly. That's where you will learn about me as an artist, what I'm up to in terms of my performing, my writing, and my recording.
Cool.
If you want to take these courses with me, such as the workshops that I've just mentioned, you will go to the Manitoba Conservatory of Music and Arts. And I believe the website link is mcma.ca. If I have gotten that wrong, my apologies to the conservatory and to the public, but perhaps we could add that link as well.
We can, and people can Google it if they can't find it either. If you're hearing this and you're not at the computer, just remember the conservatory and look it up for sure.
Yeah, and it's the first thing that comes up on under the MCMA search. So
cool.
You'll just need to go to the page that says classes and scroll down to vocal workshops.
So you're actively throughout the year doing things that are connected to this content we're talking about here. I mean, it seems like you're always sort of involved in something that relates to sort of preserving and encouraging people to think about and listen to and learn to perform a lot of these historical genres of music that have had, like we've discussed, such a big impact on today's music.
Absolutely. One other thing that I would like to mention with regards to my performing commitments to the music that we're discussing is I have a project called Caribbean and Blue. It's a live music project that I founded in 2017 during my time in Vancouver. And the purpose of that was to take standards that mention the color blue, but also to fuse them with contemporary jazz grooves and influences from Caribbean music.
Right on.
So that's another way that I introduce audiences to the music that we're discussing. And I actually premiered Caribbean and Blue in Winnipeg during the TD Winnipeg International Jazz Festival back in 2024.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yes. Awesome.
And I premiered that with artists from Papa Mambo.
Okay. Yeah. So that's
Trio Bembe. Yes.
So that's bringing another. I mean, all those genres of Latin music, which are all in many ways related to a lot of the stuff we're talking about here, too. They're brothers and sisters to some of these genres we're discussing.
Absolutely. So it's myself and Trio Bembe, Victor Lopez, Amber App, and Rodrigo Munoz, and we took elements and grooves from Latin American music and just fused it with the Caribbean influences that were already there.
That's awesome. Yeah, that sounds up my alley.
Yeah.
As far as the show on the 21st, what are the details so people know what they're in for if they want to check it out?
Okay, so the what, when, where, how, what. So the show is Steal Away, Songs of Hope and Resilience. That's the title of the show. It takes place Saturday, February 21st, starts at 7:30 p.m., and it takes place at the wonderful Crescent Arts Center on 525 Boardlaw Avenue in the heart of Osborne Village.
Cool.
The doors open at 7, but the show will commence at 7:30 p.m., and you'll be entertained with approximately 60 to 75 minutes worth of material.
Cool.
You can buy the tickets now, between now and Friday the 20th, for $20 online at Eventbrite, and we're going to provide the link to that.
Yes, we will, because I'm sure it's about this long, and
Oh, it is. It's a huge link. If you aren't able to buy the tickets between now and Friday the 20th, you can buy them at the door, but the price will go up slightly to $25.
Cool. And have you had a good response so far from people, you know, now that you've been sort of promoting this a little bit?
Oh, yes, we have had a good response. Since our last media appearance, which was Global TV, we actually sold 10 tickets that day following the broadcast.
Oh, cool. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah,
which is great. And we're continuing to sell tickets. One thing I would like to mention about the show, too, are the artists. It's very important that I mention the musicians who are involved, just if I may very quickly.
Go for it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, in 1 minute or less. We have on board Grant Simpson. Grant is a wonderful jazz pianist, composer, animateur, if you will. He is very well known on the local jazz scene as an early and vaudevillian jazz artist. He has a vaudeville production that he presents every year at the Crescent Arts Center, as well as a main concert that usually honors a well-known composer.
Oh, cool.
And he runs monthly activities out of the Crescent Arts Center and out of Gordon United Church, I believe it is, in Glen Elm.
Okay.
In the Elmwood area. And those are Café de Bois and Swing Café and Swing Jam at Gordy's. He's known as Mr. Enthusiasm, Mr. Positivity, because he's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in the music industry. And when I went about choosing the artists for this particular show, I purposely selected artists who not only would understand the nature of the show, the contents of the set list, but also who are some of the nicest people that you can work with.
That's a good, thing to have. Yeah. So yeah, quickly, who else is in the band here?
Yeah. Sorry. So Grant Simpson on piano. We have Monica Jones on soprano and tenor sax, and she's a member of the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra and a solo artist.
Cool.
Carl Kohut, who's Mr. Bass, he's one of our top call bassists in town.
Yeah, he's a lot of credits on a lot of people's jazz records for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So he'll be providing upright bass. And last but certainly not least, we have the wonderful Jennifer Hansen, an established local singer who will be providing vocals, both background and alternating lead vocals. And she will also be playing percussion for us as well. She's a fine percussionist.
And then obviously you are going
on
to be singing
vocals.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm responsible for all of the arrangements as well.
Oh, cool. Okay.